Hello, you're listening to Pixel Pixel, where the X is silent, but our love for buttons most definitely isn't. This is episode 129. I'm one of your hosts, the button crazy Anne. And with me, as always, is maybe you're not so button crazy co-host, Marcus.
Yeah, I guess I'm not as button crazy.
As me.
Yeah.
There can only be one.
Button queen.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I'm talking about buttons because the big news in my life since the last episode of the podcast was that I finally got a button machine or a pin machine. Do you go button or pin?
You could use either term. I feel like I would normally say pins.
I'm trying to train myself to say button because I started using some signage at my market says build a button because I think that sounds cuter than build a pin.
Yeah.
If you can think of some alliteration with P, we can switch to P. But no, people might be thinking about, you know, a button that you would put on a shirt to help it close. Mm-hmm. But now I'm talking about the type with a pin back button. In Japan, they would call it a Kanda badge. It's what they say, but this is like a little metal round thing, often round, with a pin on the back. Often you get band logos or fun phrases, or I don't know, you go to Hot Topic and see one with Edward Scissorhands on it. I don't know, like photos from the movie or something like that. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I've wanted a button/pin machine for a very long time. I'm sure this desire dates back to high school, when I would get like cool stationery from Japan and the beginning of my obsession with stationery, but I would not want to use it because I'd be like, I got this really cool paper. And then if I use it to write on, then it's going to be ruined. I thought if I could make them into pins and like cut out the really cute parts and put those in pins, then it would like save it forever. So I did get the opportunity to try that in college. They had like a craft club makerspace type thing and you could pay a small fee and like use their resources. Mm-hmm. So they had a button machine and I did try it there and I thought it was so cool. And I was like really into it. I wanted to get one and I looked into it and well, a real button machine costs some real money, like a really good one. You can get some garbage off of Amazon or whatever, the plastic stuff. Would not recommend that because I hear they're not that great. Really quality ones are made out of like steel, stainless steel, I guess. And they're pretty hefty. And they do cost a pretty penny. But my former coworker from my previous job got a new job out of state. And so she was moving and she used to have a button machine, but she never used it. And since she's moving, she wanted to get rid of it and she sold it to me for a bit of a discount. So I got the machine. It's a 1.75-inch, 1 1/4-inch button making machine. So usually the machines have one set size. I think you can get real fancy machines that can do multiple sizes, but this is a single size machine. She gave me that and a whole bunch of her extra pin supplies, the backers and plastic and all of that to actually make the buttons. And I think altogether she sold it to me for $300, which is cheaper than what it would be new. But yes, it's pretty expensive. But I had grand idea that I was going to use it for my small business. So I thought I could take old magazine cutouts and things and would fit really well in with the junk journaling and the upcycling themes that I got going on. I could make all these cute pins/buttons. So I started doing that last month. And then I'm not sure why I thought I would bring it to a market. Mm-hmm. I thought I would just be cute. I've been really wanting something interactive, like all the people that do markets. You know, I go on the Reddit, I go on the forums, all that stuff. I hear what people recommend for their booths. And one thing people say is really helpful is to have an interactive element. You know, people like making their own thing or having some kind of say in a unique item. Like if you have charms, like, you know, bag charms, but you let people pick out the components so that they maybe can pick out the letter to represent their name or, you know, something special. People like having that element to, you know, have a hand in something. Rather, you know, it makes it a little more personalized, a fun experience, especially when you're on a market. You kind of stand out if you have something people can interact with. So I've been thinking of different ways that I could do that. And I thought, you know, oh, I could do like a build your own junk journal. I was like, but that's a lot of work. I don't know. And my junk journals don't tend to be my most popular market item. They have done okay at some markets. But I thought, well, I've got this pin machine. Not everybody has one. And they're pretty fun to play with. So I could bring it to the market. It would be like a set piece, you know, on the table. And then I could have all my papers and people could pick out like what image they want to do and cut it how they want. And then we would make a pin right there. So I tried that. My first market with that was in late June. And then I decided to bring it this weekend. We had another market and it's a big hit. I think people really like to do it. People get really into it. They're very excited to customize and get very creative with some collaging. And I've got nail glitter. I saw another creator online posted about how they make their buttons sparkly by actually using nail glitter because it's very thin and you can put it in between the paper and the plastic, so you get a little layer of sparkle so people can customize it with that. Pick out their pictures. People really like, you know, all my Japanese papers. I brought some Japanese gaming magazines or, you know, children's books and all kinds of stuff. So I've been having a lot of fun with that. And of course, I make my own buttons. So now we have lots of buttons. So that is where our intro came from. And that's my news. Oh, I guess the other market news is apparently the gays love me.
Yes.
Yeah. What do you think about that, Marcus?
I think it's good.
Okay. So I had some of my best markets in June by a long shot. Like, we're talking 2-3 times my previous markets. And it was really cool just to see so many people come by. Of course, Pride is fun anyway. It's like a big festival, big party. Everybody's having a great time. Everybody's wearing their Pride fits. And people will come by and just get a real kick out of what I was doing. So that was really nice. Oh, and I announced my very first workshop. So I was invited to do a plushie taxidermy workshop, and I was able to advertise that at the Pride markets too. People seem really into that. So I've been selling tickets for that, and I'm excited. I'm a little intimidated, but I feel like I can teach people. I've got that ability.
You've done teaching a class before, haven't you?
Yeah, like a real class, not like a craft thing. Something. I don't think I've really taught that. Yeah, I guess so. Teaching college classes feel different than this, but it should go fine. You'll be there for moral support.
Yeah.
We'll do a dry run beforehand.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that'll be fun. I think that's all my news. I feel like that's a lot of news. I've been yapping away. What about you, Marcus? What have you got to tell the people?
Nothing really. One thing that was funny is when you were playing Prince of Persia recently. I don't know. I was just thinking about other ways to play games.
I think it's because we got the portal, right? That you were like streaming.
Yeah, we got the PlayStation Portal and we're streaming games. And the Prince of Persia that you were playing, we were playing it on an actual Xbox 360. But the Xbox Series X is backwards compatible with a fair number of 360 games. It seems like a lot of them. And so you can play it on there. However, even though you can even do streaming of your Xbox to other devices, it seems to be limited in that it will not work if you do it for a 360 game. And I think this has something to do with the way the Xbox 360 emulation works. Like, it maybe kind of boots you out of the Xbox Series operating system and kind of puts you in this other thing. I'm not really sure, actually, but it doesn't work. But you can stream from your Xbox Series X games or Xbox One games. I believe both those you can stream around, just not the 360. So I found this thing called Better X Cloud, which is like some sort of third-party initiative that enables you to use the Xbox Cloud streaming, including with 360 games. I'm not sure how they're doing it, if Xbox themselves couldn't do it, but they're doing it. I tested it. It works. Put Prince of Persia on the Retroid Pocket 5, which is more just kind of funny to see that we could, because we already had finished it by that point, so we're gonna need to play it. It was just like a proof of concept to see that it could be done, and it can. And so that's what I did for fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah, now we have to actually play something we want to play, though.
Yes.
Yes. A 360 game, huh? I'll have to think about that.
Mm-hmm.
Viva Pinata.
You could.
I've always wanted to play that.
Yeah, I wanted it when it came out, and then I didn't like it.
Oh, well, that's not high praise. Oh, well. It's fun to do things just because you can.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think with that, we'll move on to news. We've got some bummer news to talk about today. So the main one is Sony's big announcement that, well, very suddenly they announced two things on the same day via blogs. The official PlayStation blog announced that the PlayStation Store on PS3 and PS Vita will be closing. So this is something that was going to happen a couple years ago, right? And they backtracked.
Yes, at the time they backtracked.
Right.
And didn't close the storefronts.
So by closing the storefront, that means you can't buy anything new. But if it's in your library, you can still download it for now.
Yes.
We know that what usually happens, or what always happens, is the storefront closes first, and then you might get a year or two, and then they're going to close the ability to download, because they still have to have like server space for all that stuff, yes, right? When it's downloadable.
Yes.
So they made the announcement. That is happening later this year, I believe. I've forgotten.
It's a rollout for different countries different times. I think some are this year and some are next year.
Yeah, you're right. So, yeah, for us, for most countries, so it's like Mexico, Honduras, and Nicaragua is going to start in August. And then Latin American and Middle Eastern countries are going to close late 2026, and then all other countries July 2027.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting rollout. Not sure why it's like that, but so it will be 2027 sometime. We don't have a date, so we still have a bit of time to buy things if you wanted to do that. But then the other announcement, which is a separate announcement but it ties in, is that Sony will be stopping physical disc production in January 2028. They're saying for any PlayStation console. So all new games from that date will not be released on a physical disc. So I found it interesting that they were kind of doing these two announcements at the same time, because it really highlights that, okay, well, if there are not physical discs, then that means that they're only digital versions. And as we can see here, there will eventually be a time when you can no longer buy those digital versions, because the PS3 and the Vita will be closing. So thus, whatever comes next, yes, there will be a time when you can't buy those anymore. It's just like a very poignant reminder, you know, they could have done those announcements on different days, I feel, yeah. But just to really hammer it in. And we found this very interesting. I think it just feels very sudden for them to be like putting a date on it. Like, okay, like we all kind of know that the industry is moving that way, or trying to move that way. You know, not everybody likes it, but mm-hmm. that's sort of where things are trending. Different forms of media, like movies and music, you know, very heavily prioritized digital. But gaming has kind of been an outlier in that it's still a lot of physical stuff, though. I believe, was it PlayStation that said that like a certain amount, 2/3 or something of all new releases are the sales are on digital or something like that? You were telling me about
I don't
that.
Remember about the blog post they said in some sort of, I don't know, investors call or something, a number like 4 out of 5.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think they said specifically in the blog
post. Right. But I think we know that for a lot of these companies, their digital sales are higher than their physical sales at this point.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So what are your thoughts about this?
I mean, it's like, well, at first I was just confused because I was like, I did not realize that Sony owns production of access to these discs or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It makes more sense with like Nintendo Switch and Switch 2 with their proprietary cartridges. It's like, okay, we know that you have to get those purchased from Nintendo. And I know that Blu-ray is Sony's thing, but I guess I just didn't connect it because it's just a disc. I just thought about like any other disc, you know, mm-hmm. like CD-ROMs where you could get them from, you know, a variety, Verbatim, Memorex, Sony, so on, as HP, everyone.
Mm-hmm.
I've kind of just read it like that. So I was like, oh, that's so weird. But I guess they control it somehow. Disc production of Blu-ray discs.
Because
mm-hmm. again, Blu-ray is Sony's thing. So I guess it does make sense, but it's just like weird. And I think that's just like in regards to retail discs, because I can go and buy a Blu-ray today if I want to, write to it. And now I don't know that it would be certifiable. Like, I'm sure there's some sort of key or something that gets written to those discs so they can be played on PlayStations and like authenticated.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like if I burned, I don't know, God of War onto a Blu-ray and tried to play it in the PS5, obviously it wouldn't work. So there's more going on. But what I'm trying to say is, despite this announcement, I'm sure there will still be a way for people to get games, physical disc games, burned and playable in some way on a PS5, but it won't be a game that you could buy at the store. It won't be at Best Buy. It may also not be super legal. Yeah. And how you do it, like, you probably have to mod your PlayStation to be able to like run them. But there will be something. But I was just like, you know, because I was trying to figure out, like, is there a way that limited run games will still be able to like do releases? And I don't think so, at least not as easily.
Mm-hmm.
I was just curious because I'm like, it sounds so definitive. It's not possible.
Yeah, it feels like it shouldn't be possible mm-hmm. to be like, nope, that's it, all of them. They didn't even use wording like first party games.
No, it was
just
all.
Like all games. And also, it seems very weird because, you know, now we've got the PS5. The PS5 can play discs. And to put a date on it, to me, while we still have this console generation, feels very much like they're preparing for the next generation where there won't be a disc drive at all. Well, whether or not that comes out before this, I don't know. But it could be kind of around then, maybe. Or you think I'm speculating too much?
No, everyone is saying that it's because the PS6 won't have a disc drive. And that's probably true. I was just thinking maybe they put this announcement out there now to just get it out there, to pull the Band-Aid off.
Yeah.
Let everyone know, hey, discs are dead.
Yeah.
On PlayStation. Rather than that being the news with the PS6 is announced.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Because then it put a bad taste in a lot of people's mouth to be like, oh my God, no disc drive. But now we already know.
Yeah.
So there's no surprise. There's no shock. There's no displeasure. It's happening now.
Mm-hmm.
And so when the system is announced for real, maybe there'll be less bad press because it's already happening.
Yeah, their hope is probably that people will then focus more on,
here's what the good things
about
the system
are. Yeah, all
the
cool things about this new console, because we already know it wouldn't have a disc drive because they're discontinuing discs. So mm-hmm. that makes sense, you know?
Yes.
Yeah, it's just weird. I always thought that, like, it would be a slower transition. Like, all storefronts would not have discs anymore. Like, we were already moving that way. But, you know, like, the Best Buys or the Walmarts or all these stores would just, like, not sell any discs anymore. And then it would just sort of dry up. And then nobody's purchasing discs anymore. And then Sony finally says, okay, we're not doing it anymore. But instead, they're, like, getting out in front of it and be like, nope, we're done.
Yeah. I don't know why, but I always, and it's not like I've never thought this would happen. It's like, this is what all media has been trending towards for years. It's not like a surprise. I guess I've always just thought it would be like other industries where it's like, it's just like less and less companies are pushing to physical formats. Mm-hmm. You know, like a lot of people who did DVDs and then they did Blu-rays, but a lot of, there's not as many companies doing it anymore. It's not every single movie that you can get physically anymore. Same with mm-hmm. music. A lot of that is not available physically anymore. Or it's been trending much lower as time goes on.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in as opposed to that, there are these little bastions out there of, like, fandom where it's like, okay, there'll be a limited release of a CD or a vinyl or something, but it isn't typically widespread,
mm-hmm.
except for maybe the biggest things, like the biggest artists. You can get a Taylor Swift album at Walmart or, you know, whatever,
mm-hmm.
and that's fine. But it's more like these little niche communities and people who care and companies who care are still doing physical. It's just on a much smaller scale, a much more boutique scale, and maybe not in as many retailers as it once was,
mm-hmm.
you know. And so I kind of thought it would just be like that, a trickle of companies stopping, like as in publishers, reducing their physical footprint, maybe going fully digital. I didn't ever envision it coming from a console themselves, but I guess that makes sense because why would you continue to put discs on systems, you know, that costs money as an extra component? It adds size, it adds weight. If it's trending so far down, I guess it's like, okay, we don't need it.
Mm-hmm.
And they've already released consoles that don't have disc drives, like the PS5 all digital, the Xbox Series S. That was this current generation where there's no physical media. So it's like, okay. I never foresaw it for some reason, but it does make sense that they would just put a stop to it themselves.
Yeah. The time is coming. But we'll always love our discs.
Yeah.
As we sit in front of a huge pile of PS2 games.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just a shame.
Yeah.
Because games are so big.
True, yeah. It's like if you're... Well, does this mean that streaming games is going to become even more widespread? Because, like, you know, a lot of movies and things, music, you're streaming it all. But that's so much smaller than a game.
I think so. I do... people made a lot of fun of streaming when like Stadia came out on the scene, but it worked very well. And other things like PlayStation's streaming thing and Xbox Cloud and stuff, they all work very well. You know, it is, I think, a future or a popular way of managing it. Subscribe to PlayStation Plus, whatever the top version is. Get all the streaming games. Subscribe to Xbox Game Pass Ultimate. Get all the things. It is a very convenient way to access games. Instead of buying one $70 game, you're paying it's not even $70 a month yet for these mm-hmm. subscriptions. And get access to all the games, or many, obviously mm-hmm. not all. I think it will become a bigger draw in the future. I just don't like it because I like to own my games.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't matter. You know, I can't control it.
It doesn't matter what you think. We're the minority.
Yeah, a vocal minority.
Oh, yeah, we're so vocal
on
here
our
on
podcast.
Our podcast to our 5 listeners.
Yep.
Hi, folks.
Yep.
And I'm sure our listeners are also in the minority.
Mm-hmm.
But
probably.
You know. That's okay.
It does, one point though I want to make about the cloud streaming
mm-hmm.
is if it does become more popular and more successful, I do wonder though, like, what the lifespan of a digital game will be, because like when we tried playing something on PlayStation Cloud and it's like, wait a moment, we get set up, and then that later it's like, we're gonna close your game if you don't use it for so long, because we like need to make room for other people. And I'm like, you don't need, for one, you don't need to tell me that in that way, but okay, it suggests that it's a very limited amount of servers, or like, and also I think that's why they don't stream like all the games, because some of them, like PS3 games, they don't stream PS3 games because they don't have like PS3 servers or whatever out there. And so it's like, okay, so in that case, those games would not be streamable ever. At some point in the future, then probably PS4 games won't be streamable either, because they're going to do a similar cutoff.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you only ever stream the game, it's just like, okay, go buy to this game.
Mm-hmm.
Unless they release it in a newer version later on. But that's not going to happen for everything, just popular titles.
Right.
So we're going to have a similar issue, but it's already bad because it's streaming. Anyway, I don't know. It's fascinating. It's a shame.
Yeah.
But I assume it's probably only a matter of time before Xbox or Microsoft chooses to go that way as well.
Mm-hmm.
As far as Nintendo, I don't know, because they're always off doing their own weird thing.
Yeah, they're weird. They got their cartridges that apparently are expensive, and they're still doing that. So,
yeah.
I could see them being the one that's like, we're always going to have it as an option for those who want it type thing.
But they've already tested the water with key cards.
Yeah. So,
Like, here's a physical little thing, but it's meaningless.
Yeah.
And PC obviously has long already
gotten rid of this.
Really digital.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there's still physical PC games coming out.
You're right.
I honestly don't know how many, though. The only reason I know that is because a lot of visual novel companies still produce physical.
Yeah, and you're the one buying them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But by physical, it's not even a disc, though, right? It's
like an I think Manga Gamer transitioned to USB sticks, but it is still physical. The disc has the game on it. I mean, excuse me.
The stick.
The USB stick has the game files right. on it, yes.
Oh, that's so funny.
Mm-hmm. But yeah.
Yeah.
Big topic. Shocking, but inevitable, I feel.
Yeah. Okay, you got one other piece of news here you want to discuss. The Pocket Mage.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So,
I don't know what this is. So you want to tell me about
it. Yeah, you kind of know a little. So the Pocket Mage is this, like, indie-developed little piece of hardware. It's like a little, like, simple computer. It has a clamshell design with a keyboard on the bottom and a screen on the top. And it's basically like a little PDA. You know, it's got a, you can write notes on it. You can look at your calendar and update it. You can have like your phone numbers, your contacts on it. You know, various things. You can write whatever. And people can also develop their own little apps for it. And I think it's really cute. It launched on CrowdSupply, which is like Kickstarter, but more nerdy. So it was successful, I think, in the first day with its $100,000 goal. I think that's a great sign that such a small little niche thing could get so much support so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really cool. And I wanted one initially. But then, because I heard about it months ago when the person was working on developing their prototypes.
Mm-hmm.
But more recently, we went to an estate sale and picked up these little clamshell PDA things from, you know, the 90s. And I took one around as a little bit of a, like, practice run or test to see, you know, what is this like having a little, like, compact, simplistic computer. And would I use it? And would I care? And the end result was, I don't really care. I don't really like it. You know, the keys are small. It's not fun to type. The screen is small. It's inconvenient. This one is better because it's, you know, it's USB-C charging. It's not like my AAA batteries or whatever. It has a larger screen. And it has probably better keyboard. But still, it doesn't look like that much different from what I had, you know, and I didn't really care for it. I found that having a little thing to take notes on like that, I did not care. I don't know. I didn't find it a good utility.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe if it was really good with typing, but yeah, it just didn't work for me. And so I'm like, well, this probably won't work for me either. This is, like, cool in theory, but once I've actually been trying to use something like this in real life, it just doesn't fit my day to day. And so I'm sure this won't either. So I'm not going to get it. But I wanted to share it because someone might want a pocket mage. Someone may have used a PDA back in the day and want to use one again. Or someone may have never and really wants to and will actually get use out of it. You know, it's possible. So it's cool. And I think people should get it. I just don't want it for myself anymore.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Now that I'm looking at the page, this is the person that made the Wizard OS something. It's like a wizard, and they asked for different graphics of
wizards. Yes.
For their OS.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's cute. I mean, it looks cute, but yeah, that's a tiny keyboard. Tiny little space bar on there.
Yes, and I mean, you could attach like a different keyboard, like a real keyboard, but then it's like, but then you've got this little thing and then a big keyboard.
Some people like that.
There's you know, cyber decks and whatnot that people make, but for me, it's just like, no, if I want something, I want it to just be pocketable and that's it. I don't want to need to have something extra. But because the keyboard is like small and funny, I would probably want a keyboard, but then it nulls out the whole point. What is the point of this? For me.
Yeah.
For me.
For you.
Yeah.
Well, good thing you could get out of your system with a $5
with the cheap thing, yeah.
Actual PDA.
Yes.
Yes. Well, we'll leave a link in the show notes for the crowd supply campaign, which is still going on. I guess it's like $185 to get, if you want to back and get the Pocket Mage unit. Shipping in March of next year is what they're saying currently. So that's cute. But yeah. You don't need it.
I don't need it. No.
And then finally, just to round out our news, we wanted to talk about a hot new release, which is Rhythm Heaven Groove for the Nintendo Switch, which we picked up on release. Well, you haven't played enough of it yet to really talk about it. So it's in the news instead of in our playing and watching segment.
Yeah, I only did like the first row of stuff and the first Mega Mix or whatever.
What's your like first impressions?
I think the grading is easier.
Yeah?
I'm pretty sure. Because I remember in like all previous games, my first attempts on a mini game would be like,
failure.
Just okay or failure.
Yeah.
Do-do-do. You know, like that unhappy sound.
Uh-huh.
But this time it's like, what does it say? Great? And I'm like, great.
I thought that wasn't great. Well, yeah, maybe they're trying to make it a little more appealing for a wider audience. This was a bit harsh, you know? You had to be good at it.
Yeah, and then in the first set of songs, or mini games, there was one where it felt like for being the very first round of things, it was surprisingly difficult because it wasn't an obvious beat or was like the eighth note. Oh, I'm like, what is this? This is, or seventh? It was like, this is weird. Normally it's like four or something. You know, so it was odd that it was so early on, kind of a more complex thing to keep track of than normal. But otherwise, it's fine. It's Rhythm Heaven.
Yeah. Looking forward to playing more of it.
Oh, yeah.
As for things I have been playing more of, I finally beat Prince of Persia 2008 version. I guess spoilers for this game from 2008, if anyone's worried about that. I do want to talk a little bit about the ending because I was shook.
Yeah,
this wild ending. So, very, 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 very brief premise of the game is that the prince, who does not have a name, and I don't actually know if he ever has a name or if this is special, but he's just like a wild prince, or he's not in the game. I don't know. They don't ever talk about him at all. He's just a dude who's wandering the desert, and he lost his donkey, and he kind of talks a little bit about being like a thief and a rogue and doing his own thing. And his donkey ran off with all of his money or something. And then he runs into this girl, and this girl is on the run. she's a princess from this kingdom that is in turmoil because her father has, for some reason, unleashed the evil god that they've kind of kept locked away for centuries. And the god is like spreading its darkness everywhere. It's the god of dark. So it's like the forces of light versus the force of dark. So she has this power of light and she's trying to stop her dad and save the kingdom from the darkness. It's a very, very, very brief summary. And if you listen to the last episode of the podcast, you'll remember that I bitched a bit about gathering orbs because that's something you have to do. And these orbs you gather throughout the game, you have to gather them a lot to go to new areas. And they are positioned within the story as this essence that the girl has to absorb to use her powers or something like that. She needs these orbs. So you go through the whole game. You get all the orbs. You get to the end. You fight her dad. I mean, you probably kill her dad. I don't know.
I think so.
And then maybe her dad gets like absorbed into the evil god. And so then you kill the evil god or you imprison him again. And so everything's great and safe. But in the process, she sacrifices herself. And she's like known that this is something she's going to have to do in order to like balance the light and dark. So at the end of the game is you've fought the god, the girl's dead, you as the Prince of Persia come out of the temple where this epic battle happens, you have her in your arms, you put her like on this altar, and then the credits roll. And it's like, okay, we're gonna watch the credits now, and then sometimes you see a little something at the end, and I thought like it wrapped up well, and they had sort of hinted that this was something that was gonna happen. So it didn't feel like coming out of left field, like, yeah. Why did she sacrifice herself? You know, you kind of know that in order for the light and the dark to be in harmony, something like this probably would have to happen. But then once the credits end, you're playing again. And there are these four spots in the map that have been there the whole time, but you don't ever do anything there. And then all of a sudden, it's like you're running around and you see that there are these glowing trees in those four locations. So you go up to those trees, and what do? As the prince, you kill them or you hit them with your sword, and there's nothing else to do but go around all these trees and do that. And then you're kind of like, okay, well now what? And then you can run back to the area where the girl is, and basically by destroying these trees you can explain this better. I'm not even sure I fully understand, but somehow these trees are connected to the orbs that you were collecting.
Yeah.
And it's like...
Yeah, I can say that part.
Okay, you tell me then.
Okay, well, basically the whole place in the fertile grounds...
Oh, yeah, that I they never love talked to talk about the fertile grounds, is that, which is what we're saving. Yeah.
When the game starts, everything's all corrupted and nasty
black
and bad.
Black and darkness, yes.
And so when you purify it with the fertile ground stuff... Then all the life comes back.
And the life is the orbs.
And the trees and the plants and everything's blooming again.
Yeah.
So those four trees are like the different areas you were in, the four areas.
Oh,
and it's like a symbol that they've, you know, become purified. They're good again.
Uh-huh.
It's a nice tree blooming.
Yeah.
And you are killing them again.
Yeah. Okay. So you kill them. And that's bringing back the god of darkness. And also, but by killing them, you resurrect the girl. I forgot a key point here, is that the reason why the father was corrupted by the god in the first place is because the princess died. We don't know how, but she died. And in order to save her, he basically screwed the world over to resurrect this evil god, or let him free, because the dark god kind of like promised him, like, if you let me go, I'll resurrect her.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, the Prince of Persia, this idiot, does the exact same thing again. He resurrects her. She says, why? And he carries her off into the darkness, and that's the end of the game. Literally, the last thing she says is, why? And I was like, damn, that's dark. Yes. What the hell? That, I mean, maybe some people would be really upset by that, but I was like, damn, that's cool. Like, what the hell? Yeah, make this prince an asshole. Like, and I don't know if everyone, like, at the time would have read it like that. They would have been like, oh, his love is so beautiful that he would do anything for her. But I feel like the game is telling you that these men are idiots, right?
Maybe someone would think that. But the fact that they made her say why, I think says that the game developers knew it was bad, but he did.
Yeah.
Whether the players understand necessarily.
So what a place to end your game.
Yeah.
It really reminds me of Shadow of the Colossus, because in that, you're doing a horrible thing in order to save this girl. But you don't really realize that you're doing the horrible thing the whole game. Mm-hmm. And then you kind of realize at the end of the game that the main character is killing these, like, gods, basically, to resurrect his girlfriend. Where in this, the prince helped her.
Yeah.
He knows what he's doing. He's helped her this whole time. But he still makes the choice to screw everything over again and basically, like, take away all of her agency. Like, she's been trying to save her kingdom. She had her own agency to make the choice to sacrifice herself because she really cares about saving her kingdom. And he said, you know what, fuck that, I'm gonna resurrect you because I'm horny. The one thing I did like about the game is they had a fun dynamic that kind of grows over the course of the game, of their, like, you know, snarky banter, like, sort of begrudging companions that sort of gets a bit affectionate towards the end, but they're not, like, in a full-blown romance or anything near that.
Yeah, they never kiss or anything.
No, they just kind of like, yeah, it wouldn't be bad to hang out more with you kind of vibes. And then she sacrifices herself, and he's like, well, my boner's more important. I don't know. This, what a game. Anyway, I really had to share my thoughts with someone other than Marcus. But we were just like, what the hell?
Yeah.
The end of that. I want to know who decided at, was it Ubisoft? Ubisoft did Prince of Persia?
Yes.
I want to know who was like, let's make this really weird. Good job. Anyway, very memorable, at least. I don't know what the other Prince of Persia games are like in terms of story, but
yeah,
that was cool. Yeah, so that was Prince of Persia. That probably took me about, I don't know, 13 or so hours to beat. And I was a bit slow because I suck at it, but I had fun with it. And then now, for JRPG July, I'm replaying, for me, Final Fantasy VII, the OG, on PS1 for Marcus, because you've never seen it.
That's right.
And I think you should. And you seem interested. It's not me pushing you into watching it, right?
No, I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, I know this is an important game in game history, and I'm never going to play it myself because I don't really care for JRPGs. So it's like the perfect happy medium. You play it and I watch it.
Mm-hmm. And I've been playing a little bit of 7 Remake, so the second one. And it's just like they really throw a lot at you. And I was like, I really miss the more. I mean, the original 7 certainly had open areas, but it felt like a more condensed experience. I mean, it is. It's a much shorter experience overall. They're like, we want to make this game 3 times as big. And that's why we're breaking into 3 games. So I did like the first part of the remake because it was just that Midgar portion, which is very focused. But now that they're in the open world-ish area, it's like too much going on. So, and also, like, you know, there's something nostalgic about replaying 7 because I played it when I was younger, and those polygons, you know, they look dorky, but they hit different and the music's good. So anyway, it's been fun going around and doing that. I'm playing it on the Retroid Pocket Retroid Pocket 5, which you found out, this is part of your fiddling around, you can cast it. Because it's Android.
Yes.
So you can just cast it to any device that
supports
for that.
From Casty, whatever functionality, yes.
So we can cast it to our TV. So I'm playing it on the handheld. Mm-hmm. It's just mirroring the image to the TV, which is very handy. I like that.
Maybe it's very easy.
A little bit of delay, like, but that is totally fine for an RPG. So I've been doing that. and set it up with a little bit of cheats, right? So I have infinite money, so I can get potions.
Mm-hmm.
Save anywhere is on, yes. Which doesn't really matter because you can do, what is it, like a save state?
Yeah, in the emulator.
And I like that because there, you know, there are just certain things. Well, I can't be bothered. There was one area already in the slums of Midgar where the stupid hell house was killing me. And I was like, I don't want to deal with this. So just give me a bunch of Phoenix Downs and so I can revive everyone. And that's been fine since I did that. And it would feel a little bit bad, like, oh, I'm cheating or whatever.
Don't worry about it.
But yeah, I want the experience to be fun. So I don't want to be annoyed about it. So it's nice to be able to save everywhere and do that stuff.
Yeah. I will say, I don't know. Okay. I don't know that much about Final Fantasy VII, despite being a gamer in this world where Final Fantasy VII is very important.
Mm-hmm.
I did see, what is it? That Final Fantasy VII movie thing that came out at some point?
Oh, Advent right? Children?
Oh, Advent Children, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen that. Remember nothing. I know Cloud. I know Aeris dies. I know Sephiroth.
Mm-hmm.
I know those things, but I didn't really know anything. I know it's an RPG, but I don't know much beyond that. I'd never seen this game played before or anything. So I just knew, like, things, the characters, and some small aspects of it. I will say, seeing it played now, it seems, like, really cool.
Oh, whoa.
Like a lot of fun. I like the world. It's a little bit weird. There's weird things happening.
It's
and
very
I like
weird.
That.
Yeah.
And I didn't expect that, I guess. I just expected, well, when I think of JRPG, I think of like classical JRPG, which is like medieval and like that's all.
Okay.
And it's not like, you know, it's just a straight story, simple. It's not like, and this is probably stupid, but I don't play a lot of JRPGs. This is just my mindset is like, it's that. And it's not weird, really. So the fact that it's odd and unusual and there's fun, it's funny and sometimes stupid. And it's a lot of things that I didn't know. So I was like, okay, I think this is fun. And I think it's fun now. And so I'm like, well, I can understand now why this game was probably so impactful at the time. Because, you know, it's 2026.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, this is quite fun.
There you go.
So I'm sure it was, like, mind-blowing at the time.
Yeah.
In a sense. Like, more storytelling, more interest than other things, perhaps.
Yeah, I don't know, like, for
really
people
cool,
who played previous Final Fantasy games, for example, like, aside from the graphics, like, narratively and mechanically, if people felt that it was, like, more... Or not. I have no idea because I didn't play the other ones.
Yeah.
I still haven't. I've seen 6 played. And that sort of felt like it has some of the silliness to it. But 7 is very, like, there's a lot of weirdness. And I was just thinking when you said that, like, to compare, like, say 10. I think 10 is interesting and I like 10, but I don't think it has a lot of the same kind of weird.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of really weird random stuff in 7 going on,
yeah.
Like all these different things. And it's just, it's hard to explain a little bit until, like, but like the feeling as you're playing it, like you go to one area and then this thing happens and then like some totally weird thing happens. And it's like, wait, what? Mm-hmm. Like, it, yeah.
I think it's really fun. It's also a really funny game. Like, I don't remember you were trying to sneak out and like, I don't know, who was it?
Oh.
Some girl, she like heard you if you
run.
Yeah. And I'm like, this is a dumb detail, but it's cute.
Yeah, and I said that's a really fun detail. Mm-hmm. So that was when you're with Aries in her house. So Cloud like falls through the roof and then runs into Aries. And then she asks him to walk her home. And so they go to the house and she wants him to stay the night so that they can go to the slum, like the other sector or whatever, the next day. And Cloud's gonna sneak out at night at when she is still awake, and so you have to walk by her room. But if you're like me and you want to rush everywhere, you just automatically push the run button all the time. But if you as Cloud try to run by her room, she'll be like, hey, what are you doing? Like, because she can hear him, and then it throws you back into his room and it says, you know, oh, I better be quiet. And it doesn't tell you, like, the game isn't like, okay, time to sneak out of Ares's house. It just sort of says through the narrative that he's going to sneak out. So it is a fun detail to put in there. Yeah, lots of little quirky stuff like that. Like, they didn't need to do that, but they did.
Yeah, so I think it's quite enjoyable.
Oh, good.
And I think it's funny when sometimes there's these games that, there's a lot of games that don't stand up over time. And then there's some that do.
Yeah.
And I think the only thing that
was
so far
was a little rough is like the localization. I remember you mentioning, like, it's funny to think that this was like Game of the Year when it came out, and then it has lines like "this guy are sick," which that's just wrong. Like, I don't even know what happened. Someone didn't read that line before it got into the game. They didn't have a grammar check.
Yeah,
I don't know. You know, it happens, but it's just, we've come a long way in localization since then, I think.
Yeah,
but I'm glad you're enjoying it. I'm enjoying replaying it. But it will be interesting to get out of Midgar because I haven't done that in a while. I've replayed the early section a few times, but never the whole thing through again. There's lots to see. Lots of weird stuff. And I told you, I think that there are some creepy elements in it. Like, it feels legitimately creepy early on, like the introduction to Sephiroth and, like, sort of slowly showing you the spooky aspects of the world. When I was a kid, I thought it was really scary at points, and I think they do a good job with that, and I felt the remake didn't really capture that, which I was sad about. Yeah. Okay, but you've been playing some games too. In fact, you beat a game.
Yeah, if you'll call it a game.
It's, well, yeah, it's a video game.
Yes, it is. Anyway, the game that I played is called Scritchy Scratchy. It's on PC and maybe other platforms. The way I played it specifically was on Android, because for some reason I was looking at Google Play, and for some reason I still have Play Pass, which is like a thing where you get access to apps that are normally paid for free, and I had sworn they said they were getting rid of it and that they would just like let the people who had it have like a free year or something of it before it was like discontinued. But it's been years since I recall that happening, and I'm not paying for Play Pass or anything, so I don't know why it's still there. But anyway, I saw this on it and I'm like, oh, I was interested in playing that on Steam, but let me try it on my phone. Let me just do a little test of it. And when I did that, I realized it actually is very playable with a touchscreen. And probably like better than a keyboard and mouse and full fledged setup. So I'm like, okay, I'm gonna try playing this on my phone entirely. So Scritchy Scratchy though is basically just an incremental game where you get scratcher lottery tickets and scratch them and win jackpots and accrue money to buy more scratcher tickets to make more money, and so on and so on and so on and so on until you eventually beat the game. And as you play and progress, you are able to upgrade your stats, like your luck. You can increase your luck. You can get a bigger coin to scratch faster. And you can also do things like get devices to help automate the flow, because at the beginning it's purely manual. You buy one ticket, you scratch that one ticket, you redeem it for money. But as you keep playing, you get to get things like a machine that will buy tickets for you, a fan that will blow the tickets to the other machine that you buy that will scratch the tickets for you, and then a little like one of those Japanese cats that does...
Oh, Maneki Neko.
Yeah. One of those cats that will redeem the tickets for you once they're scratched. And so you slowly get to automate the process further and further. And like most of these incremental games, there's like a point at which in your run, you're no longer increasing your points enough or like quickly enough. It like slows down or plateaus. And that's when you need to, like, basically end your run and start over. When you start over, there's, like, points that you can redeem for, like, permanent unlocks. And so you get better by doing that as well. And so you continue to, you know, restart until you've got like basically all the good stuff unlocked. And then you can finally kind of pursue beating the game, which entails every time you play a run, eventually you'll get a card or a scratcher that drops that's like, if you scratch it right, you win. And if you scratch it, like win the game. And if you scratch it wrong, you die. So, and in all the runs, you will die assuredly until later when you unlock a special thing that allows you to kind of rerun that ticket without dying, so that you can eventually get it to win. But it's very simple. But I love incremental games. I haven't played one in a while, so that's probably also why this hit me. But also, I really love scratcher tickets. Like, I don't really buy them because I'm not into gambling. But when I get one as like a gift or something, I love it. I'm like, oh yeah, let me scratch this ticket. It's so fun. I love the stupid like concepts. Like sometimes there's like
a theme,
yeah, some sort of idea. Sometimes a little bit of like a game.
Uh-huh.
It's dumb, but I really like it. So the theming of this game really jives with my interests. And yeah, so I had a lot of fun playing it. It probably only took like maybe 6 hours at max to beat it. But for those few days, I know you were, you know, you saw me playing it a lot.
Oh, yeah.
And hearing the little ching.
Yeah, yeah. I remember looking over all the time and you'd be still playing it. Like, what's he up to? When I hear these little jingles, I'm like, oh, he's playing. You were really into it for a couple of days it took you to beat it.
Yeah. Yeah, I am crazy about certain incremental games.
Yeah.
Typically, I like them to be more idly, which is like where you can turn it, you can like stop, you can like walk away, close the app, and it will still be calculating in the background. But this game, it's like it takes a long time to get fully automated. So I wasn't able to do that.
Okay.
And additionally, at least on Android, if you exited the game, it would not be calculating and occurring in the background. So I had to kind of be more active. I prefer like much more idle. But yes, I am really into those type of games. So it was fun. It was a fun little bit of time, and I didn't buy it. I was able to kind of play it for free. It was fun.
Yeah, thanks, Play Pass. We didn't know we still had.
Yeah.
That's so weird. I have it too, because I also got it for free. They're like, here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, all right. But yeah, don't use it.
There's some good looking games on there.
Yeah. And that seems like this was a good fit for the Android, you know, phone, rather than playing on your computer.
In this case, yes. I think some games probably wouldn't really work very well full touchscreen. But this one, it was very easy. Just tap, tap, tap. The buttons were big enough for me to hit and everything. Yep.
And then before you got sucked into that, you were playing a game on the PlayStation Portal for a bit.
Mm-hmm. Yes, when you were playing Prince of Persia and you got me like, ooh, I want to play a video game again. But I couldn't play a video game because you were using the TV.
Oh, and that's why you figured out how to stream Xbox games when I finished.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
But also, since we have the PlayStation Portal, I was like, okay, I'm going to give this a spin. While you're playing on the big TV, I'll play on the Portal, and I don't know what to play. And so I decided to play Spider-Man Miles Morales. You had used that as like a test of a game when we first got the Portal, just because it's like, it's a...
kind of flashy.
You know, it's flashy, yeah. It's got nice graphics, and it's fast-paced. So, like, let's see what the Portal is capable of. And it was pretty good. And so I decided, sure, I'll play it. People seem to like it, and people also seem to say it's short.
Mm-hmm.
So why not? And I love Spider-Man on the N64, which is the last Spider-Man game I played. So why not? And so I've been playing that, and it's pretty fun. Very story-focused, which I appreciate. I like that. I prefer that compared to these more fully open, not so many narrative beats games. It does have a lot of like open world aspects where you can like do random missions and help people, but I'm just trying to like go straight from plot point to plot point without all the excess. I really don't care. I just want to see it through the main line. And so far, it's been pretty good. It's kind of complicated with the controls. There's a lot of things you can do with the controls because of his like web stuff and like his special Venom power, which I'm like, doesn't seem to have anything to do with Venom, the character, at least so far.
Do you know how Venom exists?
No.
Okay. Well, man, I don't know enough about it to really speak on it, but originally it's like the I think Spider-Man's symbiote suit, which Venom is a symbiote, the suit like came from Venom's planet, and then Venom is a different symbiote that in some of the stories does take over Spider-Man, and then he becomes evil. Mm. But there were like all these different versions where Venom can take over all these different things with the Venom. That's like the one in the movie, the live action movie that we saw. That is when the Venom symbiote took over the man, Eddie Brock, and then he becomes a villain. So I think that probably the suit version is like a different thing from the same planet. So it's like the same species as well. I don't know. Someone's going to be like, Anne, you don't know what you're
talking
about.
Well, don't worry. You know more than I know.
It's not.
I just know that Venom's hot.
That's what we're talking about. Well, there's no Venom in the game then.
Nah, no.
But, so you could theoretically have the quote Venom suit on Spider-Man, like the symbiote suit where it's like black and has some of those abilities, but also have like the villain Venoms. Or like then there's Carnage, which I think is also from the Venom planet. I don't know. I get all my knowledge from the live action movie because Tom Hardy as Venom was hot. That's our aside. Anyway. So Spider-Man Miles Morales has a lot of controls.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. So it's kind of confusing. The nice thing, though, is that, like, if you don't do anything for what you're supposed to be doing, it'll kind of, like, tell you, like, all the time, like, don't forget to use your Venom powers this button. I'm like, oh, thank God, because I forgot.
Yeah, you need that. It has a lot of accessibility stuff. Like, aren't you playing it on easy as well?
Yes.
You can kind of turn all the different settings pretty low if you want for different things.
Yeah. So I'm getting there. It's fun. I think it's cool. And I love the mobility of the character.
Yeah.
You know, it's fun. And it was fun on the N64. And it's fun now to be able to just kind of shoot out a web into nothing. Yeah. But then you're swinging, you know.
Yeah.
Or to like hit a wall. And instead of suddenly stopping, you just like run up it. It's like immediately swing, run up the wall and jump away and all these things. And that's always really cool. And I like that a lot. I think it's very fun.
Yeah, it looks nice. I mean, it looks nice and played smoothly on the portal. So I thought that was really cool. And we're just streaming it. So this is like the whatever PlayStation's cloud streaming service thing is, which we did mention this in the previous episode, but that's like a separate thing from the portal. So like just by itself, if you buy the PlayStation Portal, you're originally limited to just like casting what's on your PlayStation 5 to the portal,
which was like a bad decision.
Yeah,
I'm glad they did finally add more functionality.
Yeah, when it first came out, you couldn't even do the cloud streaming straight to the portal, but they did an update, I think, in December. So Sony, during the not E3 stuff last month, had a big sale, and we got a year of the streaming as part of the highest tier of PlayStation Plus, I think. So it's like, I don't even know the name, Essential. They made it really confusing, but we went splurge for that. So you can now stream directly to the portal, which seems like the ideal way to use it. And then you can, of course, try out all these games that are available in the streaming that we don't have because we don't own that one. So that seems like a good one to, you know, play, you beat it, move on to the next thing when you're just streaming.
Yeah.
So you think you'll beat it?
I don't know. I would like to.
Okay. There you go. You should.
Okay.
And then finally, we haven't really been watching that much because I've been really busy with market prep and stuff. And then when we're not watching, I guess we're playing games. I don't know. But we did watch one movie from the Vinegar Syndrome backlog, the never-ending backlog. It continues, but slowly gets smaller. I'll say up front, this is one that's going into the sell pile. It is called Shallow Grave, another really nondescript title. from 1987. This is about a group of friends going on like summer vacation. They're going on a road trip. A group of four female friends, mm-hmm. which was a bit refreshing. No boyfriends in sight. They're going on a trip together. And one of the girls witnesses a murder. Turns out it's a sheriff that murdered a woman. And then he starts murdering all the girls because they run into him.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know about you, but I feel like this is one of those movies where I didn't really feel good at the end because I was kind of like, what was the point of all this? It was yet another, like, everything sucks for everyone. And I don't know. It's funny because, you know, not all horror movies have to have, like, a good ending. Like, I can enjoy a horror movie that has a bad ending. But there are only certain ones where I'm like, I get to the end, it's a bad ending, and I'm like, this just was a bummer. There was also that Hollywood murder one. Remember, yeah. I said the same thing about that. Do you know why I feel that way? Because I don't know. Just because I don't like the movie.
I don't know.
Okay. But yes, this was one of those where, well, the sheriff has sex with this woman. He's married, so he's cheating on his wife with this woman. The woman wants him to leave his wife. So after they're done having sex, she's like, so when are you going to leave her? And he's like, I'm not. And then she's like, well, screw you. And she starts yelling at him, and then he just kills her. And it kind of seems like an accident.
Mm-hmm.
But then he just continues to keep killing people because he doesn't want his secret to get out. But he's just like a shitty guy. And the whole narrative is just a bummer. He like kills and terrorizes all these girls, and there's just one left at the end, and he's managed to dupe everyone into believing that somehow she was responsible or something. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
So it's just a bummer.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's just the through line is I don't like it when shitty men get to be shitty and there's no recourse at the end. Maybe that's it. The same thing happened in the Hollywood one.
Yeah. Well, in this one, it's like the lower level sheriff guy,
mm-hmm.
the deputy.
I don't know.
Like, does appear to finally realize.
But it's like too late.
But it's too late. And then the movie, because the movie ends.
Yes.
But it's like, oh my god. And like, this is how they're ending it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like you've been waiting for it to finally turn. Like, yeah. Someone to finally realize. And it's like, it finally happens, but it's too late.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So it was frustrating.
Yes. I can't really think of anything else to say about it. It's kind of funny because Shallow Grave is such a nondescript name. Like, really,
it is.
And it really doesn't have a lot to do with anything except for, I guess, a hunter does find the initial victims because mm-hmm. the grave was too shallow and his yes. dog found them. So, well, maybe Mr. Sheriff should have dug deeper graves. He didn't want them to get found. But
yeah.
He did a good job duping everyone anyway, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the most redeeming thing was that it was a group of four female friends. So you got some of that fun stuff. They do flirt with these guys. I don't remember. Did the guys get killed? I can't remember. They had this whole side plot where they were supposed to meet up with these guys. And I thought the guys would, like, be the, you know, deciding factor into the truth coming out, because they were like, how come the girls didn't show up? And then they start looking for them, and then I thought they would get to the bottom of it, but then they just like disappeared.
No, I think they went to the sheriff's place and then they got thrown out. I don't think they got killed though.
Okay. And they're just like, whatever, we don't even know these girls, so let's get out of here. Yeah, they're all going to Florida to do like spring break partying. So, too bad for them. And then we're also watching MasterChef Australia, which I believe we talked about before, but we finally made it to finals week.
Yes.
And I saw when we were watching, we're like on episode 70 something. So that's wild. That's a lot of episodes.
It is
MasterChef.
A lot.
Do you think you'll want to keep watching more seasons, or are you going to be like done MasterChef after this?
I don't know.
It's a good workout show.
It's like fun, but I don't know. It really depends upon the cast.
Yeah.
If you like them or not.
I can't remember. I think this season was the most memorable for me just because it was the first one I watched, but I didn't watch others, so maybe it would come back to me if I watch other seasons. I don't know. Anyway, we'll watch that sometime. Get to the end. You already know who won because I told you way long ago.
Yeah.
But
it's okay.
Yeah. Doesn't really matter. It's about the journey. And then finally, I know you've been reading some books. I don't think you wanted to talk about any you were reading, but no. We listened to an audiobook.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, so I listened to all of it and you listened to some of it. Dead Until Dark, which is the first book in the vampire. What is it called?
I think it's Southern Vampire series, or
they
or
call it
like
the Sookie Stackhouse series too.
Oh,
but anyway, this is the book series which the TV show True Blood is based off of. You and I watched the first season of True Blood together semi-recently, mm-hmm. because you like True Blood and I had never seen it, so you wanted to show it to me, and I thought that was fun. And then randomly, when I was looking on Libby, which is a library ebook and audiobook platform, it was like it just showed on the front screen like, hey, Dead Until Dark is available as an audiobook. I'm like, okay, I guess I'll get it then. I wasn't planning on it, but I'm like, that's cool, let me check it out. So we listened to that a lot of times before bed.
Yeah.
It
was a good before bed book. Mm-hmm. It was not like super disturbing or creepy like listening to it, even though that's not like super scary or anything. It's just the vibes are like we're doing spooky intense, and mm-hmm. even when Dead Until Dark has some like murder and a little bit of mystery, but it's also kind of like comfy romance vibes too, mm-hmm. a bit, a lot of talking about like Bill's physique and things like that, you know.
Yeah.
So it's easy to fall asleep too, always. I thought I like the narrator as well.
Yeah, she was good. It was fun. I thought it was fun. And it is like, oh, yeah. And I couldn't help but like visualize a lot of the show when listening to it. Because it's like very similar in a lot of points.
Yeah.
Although there are differences, too. But I thought it was fun. And a nice, easy listen. I was able to, you know, enjoy it fully without maybe paying 100% attention all of the time. And maybe that's because I'm also informed by the show.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Could
but
be.
Still, it was fun.
Yeah, good.
And I really like the cover art. Like the original cover art. I don't know if they like redid it later, but it's good.
Well, they did do like the, you know,
the True
Blood
version.
Yeah, it's like it's inspired the hit TV series, and it's just like the cover of the, you know, bloody lips. Yeah. That's the True Blood.
Well,
image.
That's terrible.
Yeah.
The original cover
the
art.
The original
is great.
Art is very fun. It's like very like
90s.
Yeah, 90s illustration vibes. Even though I think the book is from the early 2000s, but you know, it has that feeling. It's fun.
It's good.
Yeah, so I guess we could listen to another one, mm-hmm. if Libby gets it.
Mm-hmm.
You're on the wait list, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Sounds good. And with that, I think that's it for episode 129 of Pixel Pixel. Thank you all so much for joining us for yet another episode, and we shall see you again in 2 weeks.